Hey, friends, and welcome to the Happy Hour with Jamie Ivey podcast. I'm your host, Jamie, and I'm so glad you're here. Each week on this show, I invite a friend to join me, and we chat about the big things in life, the little things in life, and everything in between.
Hey friends, happy Friday. We are continuing our Friday series with counting down for our 10th birthday. The Happy Hour will be turning 10 years old in May, and we are just so excited about that. We have had so much fun going back to the very first season and listening to some of the very first podcasts that we had on our show. Last week, we shared the very first episode that we did with Jamie and her good friend, Amy Gayhart. And today, we're going to share with you the 13th episode of the Happy Hour from the very beginning with Annie F. Downs. You may know Annie F. Downs as the podcast host of the popular show, That Sounds Fun, or maybe you've heard her on Let's Read the Gospels. She's also authored several books. And on today's show, 10 years ago, you'll hear her and Jamie talking about one of those books, How to Be Brave. They also discuss what it's like to serve in ministry, ministering to college students, and they talk a little bit about college football and, of course, The Bachelorette. We are confident that you are going to laugh in today's show. Not only is it fun to go back and listen to a conversation that took place 10 years ago, Jamie and Annie together are also hilarious. You guys, we have said this before and we will say it again. These last 10 years would not have been possible without listeners like you. And we would love for you to celebrate with us. One of the best ways that you can do that is by heading over to wherever you listen to your podcast and giving us a rating and a review. Doing that allows these stories and these conversations to reach more people. So as we count down to our 10th birthday coming up soon, we hope that you enjoy this episode between Jamie and Annie F. Downs.
Hey, Annie, welcome to the Happy Hour.
Hi, Jamie. Thanks for having me.
Okay, so whenever I say your name, I feel like I have to say both, Annie Downs.
Oh, that's fine. You're welcome to do that.
Do other people call you like your full name, Annie Downs?
Well, you know what's interesting is that in my family, my first and middle name are a double name like Mary Catherine.
Okay.
And my name is Annie Foss.
Okay.
It's F-O-R-S-S, but the R is silent. Gotcha. And so more what people around hometown and what my grandparents call me is Annie Foss.
Annie Foss.
Yeah.
That is a Southern name if I've
right?
heard it.
I know. I'm the third Annie Foss in our family.
Really?
Yeah. The others are dead, so I'm the only living one. But
so would you think about passing that Annie Foss on?
I hope my sisters will. That's what I'm hoping, because I don't think I can have a junior. No, I should probably tell them.
Okay.
None of us are married yet, so we've got a little bit of time. But as soon as one of us gets hitched, I'm going to go ahead and put that in a contract somewhere. Their firstborn daughter deserves to be an Annie Foss. The other thing is that the one right before me was Annie Foss Dreyer, so she was AFD as well.
So are you.
So I have like a set of sheets, a set of china. I have all this like old 1920 stuff that has AFD on it. Isn't that cute?
I love it.
It's why I've stayed single for so long, so that I can keep using the sheets and the china.
You don't want to mess up all that monogram stuff.
right?
Well,
monogramming
also,
over marriage.
The girl doesn't really pass on a name. So that, right. I don't know why I said that.
Which that's weird though. Why don't we? We could do it just like boys do.
Okay.
I don't know why we don't.
You're in it, Annie.
I might be a trailblazer.
When I was younger, there was a family in our church that they had like a couple of kids, but their first boy was the same name as his dad and their first girl was the same name as the mom. That's confusing.
But that is confusing.
I mean,
yeah. Cause you'd
like,
be like,
too much.
Catherine, come over here. And they both. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's hard.
Too much.
Cause you can't call her junior. Like you can call him junior.
Yeah. No girl wants to be called junior.
No, we're just feeding the stereotypes. Yep. So that's all we're doing. Maybe some girl wants to be junior.
Maybe. Hey, speaking of women, you may not know this because you don't live in Texas, but there's big news here in Texas. The first, I think it's the first, anyhow, the San Antonio Spurs basketball team here just hired a woman coach.
And a female assistant coach.
Yes.
I saw that. That is so awesome. And she's so adorable. She's like this tiny little blonde. She's probably not tiny, but the picture I saw, she's next to two NBA players.
Right.
She's probably like literally 6 foot.
Is
and
it
she
the
just
first
looks 5'1". Yeah,
I think so.
It's amazing. It makes tons of sense. I mean, good for her.
Yeah.
Way to like be brave and step out and take a job that would be, so many people would turn that job down. Oh, and go make me a head coach in the WNBA.
Right.
But don't make me assistant coach in the NBA. Yeah, I think that's awesome.
Do you think the guys will listen to her?
You know, I think, you know what Christine Kane says is their invitation is your permission. And so I say that to myself a lot. If I get myself in a jam where I feel like I'm unqualified, I'm like, well, they invited me here. So that's my permission. So I think that I've never been a dude. But I think that when those players recognize that a female has been hired as an assistant coach, it's because she must be really good.
She must know some basketball.
She must know something that they need to know. And so I think by them, the Spurs giving her the invitation, that's going to be her permission to lead and their permission, the team's permission to follow.
Yeah. Say that quote one more time. I got to write this down.
Yeah, it's Christine Kane. And she says, their invitation is your permission.
I need that today. That is so good.
Isn't that good? I'm not kidding you, Jamie. I say it to myself once a week easily where I'll get asked to write something or get asked to speak somewhere. And I'll be like, I can't do that. And then I'm like, well, they invited me. So they must think that I'm capable of doing what they're asking.
Annie, that's going to change my life today. Oh my gosh. Well, I'm speaking at my first like big conference.
Yeah.
And every day I tell myself that was a mistake that they asked me. This is dumb. They must have had the wrong email.
Yeah.
Do they really know who I am? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Did y'all check my website?
Right.
You know, I have another friend who's a speaker and I saw her last week and she said, we were talking like who books you and who helps you handle those conversations. And she says, I'm having a real hard time right now because I handle all those conversations myself. And every time I tell them why they shouldn't hire me, right. I was like, dude, they are calling you.
Yeah.
If you're reaching out to a church, and they're going, well, tell us why you should hire me. That's one thing. But if a conference director is calling you and asking you to speak, they want you there.
So
tell them all the reasons that you shouldn't be
That's
there
so good.
Because they've already decided.
I do that with writing stuff too. Like, did you really want me to write this?
Yes. We got to quit doing that.
I love it.
And we do that in friendships too, right? There are times in friendships where someone goes, you and I just did it where I had the wrong time and you said, how about now? And I said, are you sure? And
right.
I'm like, well, you offered now. I should just listen. You know, we do that in friendships. We do that in relationships all the time. We think they already said what I needed to hear and it's still not enough for me.
That's good.
You know, and then when we need to start going, I'm going to actually believe you. I have friends in Nashville that what we say to each other is I'm going to believe you unless you tell me, you know, are you okay? I'm giving you one chance to answer that.
Yes.
And I'm just going to believe you.
What it does in friendships is it takes away all the like guesswork, like, or in marriage. If I ask Aaron, like, hey, are you upset with me? And he says no, then I have to believe him.
Right.
If he's still acting like he's upset, then it may be something else.
Right.
Or it's his turn now to like say like, hey, I didn't really, you know, but whatever. I'm going to believe you when you say that.
Yeah, that's right. And for women who are in my life place of being single, it's also like if we want to be pursued, then we have to let them come to us because we have to believe that we didn't make it happen.
Right.
You know, we have to believe that, okay, he's the one who said lunch. So
there you go.
He wanted to go to lunch. And so I'm going to go to lunch because I want to go to lunch. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's this, it is, I'm telling you that one sentence from Christine Kane, it changes. It has made a difference to me because I think about it in about every turn of my life.
So good. Mm-hmm, okay. Speaking of being brave. Hello.
Yeah.
You have a new book out.
I do. Let's all be brave.
Let's all be brave. And when did it come out?
It came out July 15th.
Okay. Okay. So I read it this summer.
It's fresh out.
I read it on a boat in Tennessee. It was so wonderful.
While
my kids were like jumping off and tubing, I was reading Let's All Be Brave. So I read it and I highly recommend it if you're listening. Actually, we have said the word brave like 15 times already because it is something that we all want in our life for sure.
Yeah.
But tell me about writing this book. I mean, how long did you write this? Because the book, I feel like the chapters span from lots of different times in your life.
Right. Yeah. So for those of you who haven't seen the book yet, the way it works is each chapter tells you the month that I wrote it and the coffee shop where I was.
Which, can I just say this? I like that.
Oh, thanks.
I like it a lot.
It's really, I mean, I love to treat my books like yearbooks of my life as well.
Right.
And so I really love that I can remember when I flip through, I remember what seat I was on in the train in Edinburgh, Scotland. And I remember being at the coffee shop in Portland. And, you know, like it's fun for me. Yeah. So yeah, it was written, you know, this is my fourth book out with Zondervan, and it's the first one that has kind of been, it's the first one for adults. All the others have been for teen girls.
Okay.
This is the first one that's for men and women. And it has been, I knew the title of this book in 2010, maybe. And I didn't have a single book out at that point. I just knew someday I wanted to write a book called Let's All Be Brave.
So this has been your heartbeat for a long time.
Yeah, because the best joke of it all is that I wrote that before the really hard stuff. And for me, the really hard stuff I've experienced so far, the stuff that really pushed me to be brave had not even happened yet.
Yeah.
I would have never known. So I wrote on the book, like I wrote pieces of the book where I'd sit down and feel massively inspired to like, I have to record what I'm feeling right now.
Right.
Whereas you know, from writing, and a lot of people who write professionally know that we don't really get to wait on inspiration in general. Uh-huh. One of my favorite writing quotes is someone asked a writer, do you only write when you're inspired? And he said, yes. And I get inspired every morning at 9 a.m. You know, like,
right. I sit my butt in the chair.
Yeah.
And I write.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't really, and so when I get on a book deadline, I don't really get to be like, I hope I feel this.
No, you just have to write the words.
I got to write 2,000 words today. And that's all there is to it. So yeah, the book's been a dream in my heart for a long time. I wrote it in 2013 is when I wrote the majority of it, and when we kind of pulled together all the pieces, and made it one piece. It is the hardest thing I've ever done. It's sent me back into counseling as soon as I turned it in. I turned it in on July 4th, the first draft, July 4th of 2013. And my first counseling appointment was July 15th.
Love it.
My heart is just in that book. With my teen books, I had written the books for teenagers. I wrote them in my 30s about Annie when she was 15 or gotcha. Annie when she was 17.
Right. Uh-huh.
Let's All Be Brave was 30 something Annie writing about 30 something Annie, breakups that happened right now, heartbreak that happened right now, moving cities that was happening right now. I mean, so when it's coming out, you're going, man, that guy from high school can pick this up and see all the hurt. Or that guy from college that I say, if I just stayed in my college town, I think I'd have married him.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't call people and say that stuff to
them. Right. But you write it.
But I'm dumb enough to put it in a book.
Right.
So it was a really, but I'll tell you, I grew up on, my parents kind of live on farmland, but we didn't ever farm.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the first time I've ever had any understanding of why farmers do what they do. Because in 2013, I turned over the soil and I planted the seeds, and I suffered for this land.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it would never be worth it. That was really one of the hard things, is when I turned the book in last summer, I said to my editor, this is the hardest thing I've ever done, and I'm not even sure it's good. You know, if you work really hard and you're sure something's really good,
that feels
then
good.
Like, and you're like, oh,
awesome.
This is worth it.
Right.
Yeah. But when you work really hard and you think, and this still could suck.
Right.
That's send you to counseling. but since it's come out, and since my friends and family have read it, and people have read it and talk about it on the internet, I see the fruit. This is what it's like. Right. A farmer, you know, and you don't get to stop working, right? A farmer doesn't sit back and let their garden just explode with fruit.
Right.
You know, because then things rot and whatever. Uh-huh. So it's not like you get to sit back on the porch and just watch, but you get to go, oh,
it was
I didn't
it.
Do, all I did was the beginning.
Right.
God did everything in the middle, and God grew these fruits, and I get to help harvest them, and I get to be a part of that. But man, it makes me want to start a garden, because I'm like, I get it.
So fun.
I get it. So.
Okay. Well, I like I said, I read it, and I haven't read any of your other books, but I did feel as though I was kind of like walking along some of these stories with you. And that felt really, and then to see your trial with it, and then your frustration with it, and then some of your success and some of your failures. Like, it was just felt like this big book of like encouraging, and the title, Let's All Be Brave. That's what it was.
Yeah.
You know, and I look back at things in my life that I would categorize into some of the stuff that you've talked about with being brave. And I'm like, man, I'm braver than I thought I was.
Yes, that's it. That is the thing. Is if someone asked me last week, what's the one thing you want people to know from reading your book before and after? And I said, I just want people to know that they are already brave.
Yeah, that's exactly. I was reading brave. It going, man, I am not giving myself enough credit. I have so much more bravery in my life to learn and to tackle. But gosh, I've done brave things.
Dude, that gives me goosebumps. That is exactly it. Is that there is, if you told me your story, and if we got to listen to every listener who's hearing this, tell us their story, we go, that was brave. Right.
Exactly.
That was brave.
Yep.
That was brave. And you go, oh, I didn't even think about that.
Right.
You know, I didn't think that was brave. That was just the right thing to do. Or so I didn't think that was brave. His job transferred us
and
to St. Antonio.
Did it.
And we just did it, you know? And you just go, no, it's brave because when you moved to a new city, you didn't stay in your house.
Right.
And you didn't like ignore everyone in the whole rest of the city for a year.
Yeah.
You like made friends.
Yeah.
And you went to a church that you didn't know anybody. And, you know, like, I think we think that, and I talk about this in the book, but we think that courage is this big thing that we have to do. Like, I'm moving overseas and that is really brave. Yes. Don't hear me say this now. That is really brave. But, we're all quitting our jobs and we're starting something new, or we're going to adopt 94 children.
Exactly.
Right. And like, and that all is brave, but in my life, that isn't what courage has looked like. Courage has looked like getting out of bed when I didn't feel like getting out of bed.
Right.
Courage has looked like going on dates I didn't want to go on. Courage has looked like writing books that were hard to write, moving to cities that I wasn't sure about. I mean, my courage looks very normal.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we want people to know when they read this book is like, oh, I'm already brave. And not only can I recognize it and celebrate it in me, but I want to recognize it and celebrate it in you.
Right.
And then let's be brave together. Yes. And that's what's going to really impact the planet, I think.
Yeah. And I think about that as raising kids. I'm like, man, I want my kids to be brave. I want them to try new things. And so in a sense, when we're talking about that, all of us, we look at our lives and we have been brave. I want my kids to just feel like this is just normal, but really they're being so brave.
Yeah. I'm in my hometown for a couple of days. And last night, my best friend's kid started kindergarten today. And last night during his bath, he asked if he could pray for tomorrow for his first day of school. And he said, dear God, I'm a little bit nervous about kindergarten. Can you please make me brave?
Aww.
I mean, like a kindergartner going to his first day of school recognizes that it's going to take a little courage. Yes. You know, and that's that's the thing. We want to put that in our kids. I lead a small group of girls who are going to be seniors in college. And though I did not birth any of them, they're kind of like
your babies.
My children. Yeah. Yeah. When I go out of town, I feel like I'm leaving my kids because I'm like, someone's going to need something on Saturday afternoon and I'm gone.
Yeah.
And we talk a lot about like, hey, if you want to be a musician, that's brave. Mm-hmm. If you and your boyfriend want to get married right when you graduate and deal with the financialness of being married at 21 and figuring that out, that's brave.
Right.
You can do it. Yeah. That's brave. Yeah. You know, like we just need to put in our kids of like, you are already brave.
Aww.
And we can see it. You know, I can see it in you.
Okay. I want to tell you this one quick story and then we can move on.
But
I was reading this, like I told you, I'm reading this book when we're on the lake and we were Lenoir City, Tennessee is where we were on the lake. It was so beautiful. And my son, Amos, we adopted him from Haiti when he was 4 and a half. And so he's always kind of fearful of stuff. Like just the most thing that you think this is not scary is really scary to him. And so all the kids are jumping off the boat and going on the tube and he won't get in the water. And he has a life jacket on. We show him how it's going to make him float. Like we're like, baby, you can trust it. Nothing's going to happen to you. You know, whatever. And so, you know, a day goes by and he doesn't even get in the water, a whole day on the lake. I mean, can you imagine? And so then the next day he's so scared and he said, will you pray with me, Mom? And I said, well, sure. Why didn't I think about this yesterday? So we prayed and then he walked as soon as we prayed, finished. Amen. He walks in the boat, jumps in. I mean, just like that. And then he gets out and he has the biggest smile on his face. And he's like, did you push me, Mom? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, I just jumped in. I don't know how. And I was like, you're so brave. I mean, it was just like, it was so wonderful to see him be brave and jump off into the water.
Yeah. And see, and you recognize that in him. You recognize that bravery. It, the same is true when a kid learns to walk. He walks across the room and he falls down and every adult cheers.
Yeah.
And yet we're not brave enough to try things where we might fall down
so
because
good.
We think we don't want to fall. And it's like, no, that's when parents clap. Parents clap when the kid falls because the kid tried.
And they're going to get back up again.
And they're going to get back up. Right. And you knew that when he jumped in the water, he would love it. And right. he comes out and rides and he loved it. And he can do it over and over again. Yeah.
Love it.
Kids are brave.
Okay. Okay. This is the last thing about the book for real. We have something in common that I found out from your book.
What is it? Did you love the Halo Express too?
No, but I also have on my bucket list to be on a TV show.
Let's do it. How do we do it?
I don't know, but wouldn't that be fun?
Yes, totally. I would love to be doing stuff on TV. I think it'd be so fun.
So fun. I used to, when I was little, I wanted to be a news anchor.
Oh yeah. I think I knew that. And you've done radio, right?
Yeah, I've done radio. And then, you know, we did the backstage stuff at IF.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was like as close to my news anchor.
Jenny Allen, you know, Ann Voskamp says there's going to be an IF TV.
Well,
we should just push Jenny Allen to make us the hosts and Joy Egrich, the host of IF TV, the three
it's
of us.
It's like The View, but not.
But not.
Right.
And I can totally play super liberal if I have to. And you could too. You live in Austin.
We
I live in Nashville.
We can go anyway. I mean,
Joy lives in Portland. We actually probably need to find some conservatives. We need Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Elizabeth Hasselbeck. She's on Fox. She's not leaving Fox. IF TV. Here we come. Come on.
Joy, I mean, Elizabeth will totally leave Fox for IF TV.
Especially if she knows the three of us are in it.
Right.
I mean, that's what you got.
Make friends with her.
Okay. So are you a football fan?
Yes, I can't wait.
Now you went to the University of Georgia, am I right? Am
I
right?
I went to Georgia, so I'm a huge Bulldogs fan. I like to say that they've been breaking my heart since 1980, because that's the year I was born and the last time they won the national championship.
Ah.
And so but then I really love the Atlanta Falcons too.
Oh, because
which has been hard because moving to Nashville, I should have switched to the Tennessee Titans, and I just can't do it. I try every year.
You gotta
and I just
stick
can't.
With who you're from though.
And there's just this thing about the Atlanta Dome. I mean, when I'm in there, I'm just happy.
Do you go to a lot of games?
When I lived in Atlanta, we probably went two or three times a season. Now I try to come and go one. My dad and I love to go. And there's a bus that'll drive you from Nashville to Atlanta.
Well, and then, like a party bus?
You know, I wish. No, it's like a little bit nicer than a Greyhound. It's Megabus.
Okay.
And so the drop off is right near the dome. So a lot of times, like, I'll bus down Saturday morning, Sunday morning, do the game with my dad and bus back Sunday night.
That is a fan, Annie. I think I have only been to one professional football game in my entire life.
What would it be? Dallas?
Houston Oilers.
Oh, the Oilers, which are not the type?
Yes.
Same team. Yeah. Yeah. Do you love Texas? Is that your people?
UT. You know, here, University of Texas. Neither Aaron and I went there, but we've lived here for 6 years and we've kind of like become fans and love it. Yeah. And
I'm like the kind of football fan that last week I literally said to one of my guy friends, I was like, sometimes I forget it's coming back. Sometimes I forget. And then the people start talking about it. I'm like, oh yeah, it's back. I don't have to be without it anymore.
I know. I think we're like 24 days out here from our first kickoff.
Yeah,
first
we're 24 game. Days too. Georgia's 24 days too.
Yeah.
Who's y'all's first game?
University of North Texas.
Yeah, they're always like teams that are getting paid really well to come be a hard scrimmage.
Thank you for coming here. You know, we have a brand new coach. And so this is like a whole new season, a whole new start here for Texas football.
And you needed it. Yeah.
I'm excited about it. I really am.
Okay. It's fun. It's fun to have a good college team you like that you can cheer no matter how they do, because then the good years, listen to this, Jamie. I think it was last year, the Bulldogs were first. They played in the Georgia Dome in the SEC Championship. If they would have won, we would have gone to the national championship. They lost on like the 10-yard line. They couldn't make in the dome. A few weeks later, the Falcons are the NFC Championship game before they go to the Super Bowl, and they lost in the same end zone at the end of the game. I could not be consoled.
Then you knew turf down there. Something happened.
I was like, somebody needs to pray. We need to anoint with oil. I mean, you have not seen a person have a hard day.
You play fantasy football?
No, I should. Do you? I don't know.
Okay. I'm not a big NFL fan. Don't really enjoy watching the games. We have a friend that plays, so I'll watch his team, but. Yeah. I'm not really like into it, but I did last year fantasy football with my brother.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't
get either.
I don't know what to do. I don't know when to trade. I'm like, I don't understand.
And you have to watch so many games.
My brother Jordan's like, well, you have a whole lineup and they're all injured. They're not playing. I'm like, well, how am I supposed to know that?
I can't keep up with all that. That seems like a lot of work. And I'm really good at going all into something.
So you're going to go in.
Right. So I know that I either need to stay out or make it my new favorite hobby. And so I've stayed out.
I will probably set it up just so I can, you know, have something to talk about with my brother because I love that.
Yes.
I fizz out 4 games.
That's it. Trust me that if some boy said to me, Annie, I want you to play, some single cute 35-year-old said, I want you to play fantasy football, I'd be all
you
over it.
You would know
it.
Every player that is available that week.
Don't worry. I haven't taken a hard stance on this.
You're like a fantasy football champion all That's of a sudden. Right. They're like, who's this right. Annie Downs lady?
That's right. And I'm like, just trying to get a date.
There you go. What can I do? Okay. Another sports thing. I thought of you this summer when Vanderbilt won.
Right. My baseball boys.
Yeah.
So Vanderbilt baseball team, a lot of those dudes go to our church in Nashville.
Okay.
And I volunteer with the college ministry. And so a lot of those, there's like 5 to 7 of them that are like my little brothers. We eat lunch once a week. And they were supposed to win in the 2013 season. They were really good last year and they lost surprisingly and it was heartbreaking and I felt like I had PTSD. I mean, it was terrible. Mm. And then this year they won the national championship in baseball. The first national championship men have ever had at Vanderbilt. There's been a women's bowling championship in 1987 or something. Right. So they're the first like big sport.
That's the
national
first championship for the, for the university.
Yes, besides the women's bowling. Yeah. So it's just been, it's really exciting. I've never been connected with a team that won a national championship like that. And I mean, so for all of us that were in Nashville, they opened up the football stadium and let everyone bring their picnic blankets and you could come and sit and watch the game on the.
Oh, big so screen. Fun.
And so when we won, you're with like 3,000 other fans losing. Your mom, I mean, crying, screaming, so all the feelings.
That gives me chills. The closest I've ever come to that, and this does not even hardly relate, but when I was a junior in high school, we won baseball state. You know,
yes.
I mean.
Oh. Yes, it does relate. I bet
my boyfriend
exactly,
was on the team. I mean, you know.
Yes, that is exactly the same feeling of like, I can't believe these people that I love just became the best baseball players in college in America.
The highest you can go.
You can't beat that. What do you do? What do you do? I mean, it was just amazing. And they're good guys. And I'm just, and then my intern, I had an intern who was dating one of the pitchers and they got engaged on the field.
I saw that.
So she's my intern, Megan.
Oh my gosh. That was so precious.
It was the best. He told me he decided the first game of the season in January or in February. He said, if we make it to Omaha, I'm going to propose to Megan on the field. And I was like, excuse me. And then they won. And so then at the national championship game, they got engaged on the field. I mean, it was just amazing.
Okay,
it's
now,
so sweet.
Would he have done that had they lost?
Well, the plan was he took the ring with him to Omaha.
Okay.
And plan was.
Was
whatever,
it like in his baseball bag? I mean, he's got
the manager had it. The manager had it the whole time.
Precious.
And so whatever game they lost that night, they were going to go to dinner and get engaged.
Okay.
And then if they won, it was on the field. And they won. Who can believe? Because I'm like the most annoying big sister in this situation ever. I had like 8 restaurants I'd called. I mean, I was like ready to
You're
make
ready.
Him a reservation. Yeah. I was ready when he needed me to be ready. And then I was like, they kept winning. And I was like, this may literally happen on the field. I cannot believe it.
Okay. So you had a lot at stake, more than just Vanderbilt winning. Like your girl was getting engaged.
The future of my intern's marital bliss was in the hands of this baseball
That's
team.
That's so fun. So now I saw a video clip of it. Did they air that on TV?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was on TV. Isn't that fun?
So
and
precious.
They got sweet congratulations from really famous athletes. And I mean, she was over the moon. She's mostly excited to get to marry him. But second to that was that it had so many fun people.
Well,
know.
Of course. That's so fun. One of my sons plays baseball. And this is so dumb. And I have repented of this, but sometimes I pray to God that one of my kids will play college sports.
Oh, listen, no, I can respect that.
Aaron's like, I think you should pray that they're like, go to the nations and like, tell lots of people about Jesus. I'm like, I do pray that too.
When they're 23.
Right. But I want to experience college sports with one of my kids.
You know what? There's an interesting, this is way over spiritualizing, but there's an interesting thing about doing ministry to college athletes and probably athletes in general.
Right.
Is that they are very disciplined and they have been taught growing up that if they work hard enough, they can get whatever they want. Mm. If they, and, they, and it is a personal, it is a personal decision and it is a personal discipline.
Right.
And so when you are talking to them about Jesus, it is a hard comprehension that there is something they can't get on their own.
That is good. That, and so that they can't do enough.
Right. Right. That you can't work hard enough. You can't pump enough iron. Mm-hmm. You can't hit enough home runs to save your soul. Right. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but I'm telling you, when you are, when those are your people and you are saying to them, you aren't good enough.
Right.
You just, you aren't holy enough without Jesus. That is, athletes find that hard.
And with athletes, I mean, if you mess up in a game, the game could be over because of that.
Right.
Whereas
right.
with Jesus, thank right. goodness.
They, right.
Right.
And they just learn. But on the flip side, when they get sold out and when they believe in Jesus,
it's all the way.
They are the ones. They, because nothing sways them.
Yeah.
Nothing keeps them from working out or eating right. Their bodies are temples. They will do what they
their eyes are
do.
On the prize.
And that happens. The same thing happens when it's Jesus' surprise. And it is the most beautiful thing. I could just cry telling you about it. They're just, I love athletes. I hope that doing ministry to athletes continues to be a big part of the story God tells in my life.
That's so fun. Well, you never know where that would lead you on the IF TV show.
That's right. And you know, one of my buddies, one of the guys got drafted to the Detroit Tigers.
Uh-huh.
He was like, hey, Annie, our team chaplain is leaving. Do you want to apply for the job? I'm like, kind of.
This goes along with that whole fantasy football thing with the single 35-year-old men.
Right. Can you imagine me being like at spring training because I'm the chaplain for a whole baseball team?
Shut up. That would be so fun. You know, I love sports like you do. And so when I was in high school, I wasn't a team chaplain because I didn't love Jesus, but I tried out to be the mascot.
Oh, yeah.
Because I could be on the field and watch the football games.
And you're an integral part.
And
well, I was a manager, so no, I'm with you.
No, the cheer coach or whatever would always be like, Jamie, we need you over here with us. Like, you're supposed to be doing something with these cheerleaders. Like, not right now. I got to watch the game. I mean, this is crazy.
This is a serious moment in the game. I need everybody to settle down. The mascot is calling for focus.
We cannot be cheering right now. We need to watch the game.
That's right.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, that's great. Man, we need to watch some sports together then. That's good. That's good to know. I should just come to Austin and buckle down for a weekend and we'll watch all the sports.
Oh my gosh, do it. Because my husband Aaron does not watch sports with me at all.
I'm scared I'm going to marry one of those.
Well,
it could happen.
Aaron is the first guy I ever dated that didn't play baseball. That was what kind of girl I was.
That was one of my lines in the sand. Yes. Do you play baseball? Yep.
Yep, you're in. So God gave me exactly what I never thought I would get.
Yeah. Do you know, I dated a guy a couple of years ago, and one time we were talking about sports kind of like this, and he was like, yeah, I hate sports. And I was like, excuse me. And he was like, I mean, I went to a Big 12 school or something. And he was like, and I mean, I went to the games, but I would talk to my friends and I was like, I don't think this is going to work.
This is not okay.
I'm not sure it's going to be enough.
Well, you remember the big national championship game that we just had this past year between Alabama and Auburn?
Yeah.
We're driving home from family or something. And so I'm listening on the radio and I go absolutely berserk because I can't believe what happened. We all know they ran back from like over a, you know, 100 yards, whatever.
Yeah.
And so I'm telling Aaron about it and he's like, I just don't understand what you're saying. And I was like, okay, I have to call my dad. I cannot have this conversation with you right now.
That's right.
But you know what? It works.
Yeah.
Okay. I have another question for you.
Okay.
I read The Fault in Our Stars this summer.
Yeah. Me too.
And I know you're a fan.
I am a fan.
Can you explain how you got to interview these people? When I looked on your blog and I saw this. What was going on here, Annie?
So let me back up a smidge and tell you, I've been a John Green fan since 2007.
So let me stop you real quick. I don't know anything else about him.
Okay. So he and his brother have a YouTube channel called Vlog Brothers.
Oh.
And in 2007, they started it where I think that Christmas 2006, their parents had given them camcorders, old school video camera, right? Okay. And so for the whole year, they decided as brothers, they were only going to talk via YouTube video, no textual communication, no emails.
This was in 2007?
Yes. No emails, no texting. You could only talk on the phone or via video. And every Monday through Friday, they made a video. Well, it just kind of, people started watching them and someone told me about it and I started watching them. And so you watch them every day talk to each other, which sounds ridiculous, but it was great. It was really interesting. And I knew he was an author. And at the time he lived in New York.
Okay.
And so I read some of his books. His books are probably PG-13.
Okay.
But I read a couple of his, and they're for teenagers.
I was going to ask, are they teen books?
Yeah, okay. Teen books. He's a YA author.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so I just started following his career and following him as an author and as a YouTuber.
Okay.
As we talked about, we like TV. I like video. Yes. I like learning how to do YouTube as well. And so anyway, so I've been a fan of his for 6 years.
Okay.
7 years. Fault in Our Stars comes out, and there's a whole conversation to be had about how the Fault in Our Stars came out and how the whole time he was writing the book, he was making videos. So this crowd of a million plus people uh-huh. are watching him write a book. And so when it goes on Amazon in pre-orders, before it even has a cover, it's the number one book on Amazon.
Shut up. That's marketing. So would he talk on his video about like, hey, I wrote about this today?
No, he would only say like he moved to Amsterdam. He moved to Stanwood, Amsterdam for a month.
Uh-huh.
Well, so we knew that there were parts of the book that were about Amsterdam and okay. you know, that kind of stuff.
Okay. I got it. So he was just letting you in a little bit. Yeah. Gotcha.
So The Fault in Our Stars was a big hit with his crowd long before anybody had read it because they just were connected to him.
Gotcha. Which is then, brilliant.
Brilliant. The Perfect Storm is that it's an incredible story
uh-huh.
and it's a beautifully written book. So he's got this crowd of hundreds of thousands of people who have already bought it only because
of who he is.
They love him.
Right.
And then they tell people that it's an amazing book. He made a deal that if you pre-ordered the book, he would autograph the book for you. And so he had to sign his entire first printing. He had to sign 150,000 copies.
Shut up.
Yes. You can go back and watch the videos. He just, for days, all he did was sign. He had to go to the doctor for his hand, all sorts of stuff.
Oh, okay. Sure.
So that's how Fault in Our Stars, I pre-ordered it. I read it. I really liked it.
You got a signed copy?
I got a signed copy. Again, it's rated PG-13. Two okay. teenagers have sex in it that are not married.
Uh-huh.
And as you know, and I mean, that's not like ruining a plot. Everybody would probably do that yeah. after 2 minutes. It became a movie, as you know.
Uh-huh.
Fault in Our Stars became a movie. And they did a tour to about 6 different cities that was crowd decided. Like the crowds decided which cities they went to.
Okay.
And Nashville was one of the cities that got picked somehow. Nashville never wins stuff like that because everybody in Nashville's like, you want me to vote on you to come here? Yeah, right. Yeah, you should want to come here. You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's Nashville. We don't want you to think that we think you're cool.
No.
And so I was shocked that it won. So the PR firm emails me.
Out of nowhere?
Out of nowhere. And says, would you be interested in being on the red carpet? And I'm like, I like poop my pants.
For
I was
sure.
like, times a million. And I was like, of course I would. You know, what does that look like? And I said, do I need to bring a video camera and a video crew? And he was like, yeah, if you want to do interviews, you can. And I was like, I'm about to interview John Gray.
Time out. They just invited you just to be there.
Yeah.
And then you said,
I said, can I bring a video crew? Can I make this scarier for me? Can I make this straight? So I got to interview John Green and Shailene Woodley and Ansel Elgort and Nat Wolff. I mean, it was insane. I couldn't believe it. It was insane. And it was so terrifying. I mean, I was absolutely scared to death. So literally the PR person. So that's on like a Thursday. We go and they do the red carpet. And I got to see the film that morning with like 10 people. It was a month before the movie came out. It was me and a bunch of like old hairy guys who do movie reviews. And then on the red carpet, there was like all these like newspapers and magazines and television stations. And then Annie Downs. If I could say Annie blogs. I mean, I was like, it was one of those where you're like, only the Lord elevates a little nothing to a place like that. You know, like,
that is so fun.
What was I doing there? And so, it was really interesting. I learned a lot from it. I wish I'd have done better, but it was really fun. And I am still, even though I've taken more flack for this than for anything else I've ever written in the history of ever, I still stand by that moms and or parents and teenagers, if the teenager's going to see it, the parent needs to see it too.
Yeah.
I just totally, I think that that is like a huge deal. It's a movie that, and a story that people need to talk about.
Yeah.
So
what'd you do?
Did you like it? Did you like the book?
I love the book.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it'll, I mean, I was reading it on a plane, just like crying.
Yeah. It's very moving. It's really beautiful.
It was so good. I have not seen the movie yet.
Yeah.
Only because I have kids and when can I go to the movie? Yeah.
Right. I'd say the part of the sex scene in the movie is more mature than I think it would be for 2 16-year-olds.
Okay.
It looks more scripted. I mean, it's disappointing. I don't like the part. I don't like that. But I think the movie and the book are worth reading and seeing because it's a conversation. It's beautiful for starters. It's beautiful art.
Yeah.
For second, it's a great conversation.
Okay. Peace.
How else are you going to say to your kids, like, hey, so two teenagers are dying of cancer and they decide and they love each other and they have sex. What do you think about that?
Right.
That's not like a dining room conversation, like a card you're going to pull out. Of
Like those conversation cards.
Right. That's an interesting question, 17-year-old boy.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just feel like, I feel like art does that for us. Art opens up opportunities for us to have conversation.
Well, it does. And I did see that you took a lot of flack for it.
Yeah. And, you know, you have to decide what's best for your teenagers. And if you don't want them to see that at all, don't. I don't care.
Yeah.
But certainly don't send your 15-year-old and her 5 best friends
to go see
in to see that movie and you not know what's happening in there.
Right.
That's probably true in general, right? Yeah. But particularly in this, because it's so moving and teenagers feel so connected to this story and these characters that they think, that's exactly what I would do too.
Right. And then leads that conversation to talk about that.
Right. So I'm okay that I took flack for that because I still think that that's what I would say to a parent if they called me today and asked me.
Good. So. There you go. Okay. Speaking of TV and stuff, did you watch The Bachelorette?
Yes.
Were you happy with the ending?
Well, you know, Josh Murray is Aaron Murray's brother, who is the University of Georgia quarterback.
Well, yeah, that's your people.
So it's my people. So from the minute that Aaron Murray tweeted that Josh Murray was going to LA before the show even started, I was like, I hope Josh Murray wins. And then he did. I couldn't believe it. You know, I've had a lot of friends. We have a group of about 6 girls that watch together, which is kind of the only way the Bachelor and Bachelorette series has survived.
I agree.
People, it has become a social thing. It is not that, in fact, people repeatedly say they're going to quit it because the show shows more debauchery every time.
Every scene, I'm like, this. Well, I haven't seen it in forever. I watched this one.
Yeah.
But every time I watch it, I'm like, I'm never doing this again.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people, Sean and Catherine were very redemptive and seemed to do things well. I'm not personal friends with them beyond tweeting back and forth a couple of times. And I love Sean's sister. She's a friend of mine. And so I don't read their journals, so I don't know what their personal relationship with the Lord are like, but I feel like they were a redemptive story.
Yeah.
And I feel like they have done really well with the platform that the Lord has given them. But I think that this season did not show that the same. But when we put people who don't believe like we do on television, we can't be surprised when they make decisions
that's
we wouldn't
make. Exactly right. That is so true. Did you watch the After the Rose ceremony?
Yes.
What did you, oh my gosh. Did you hear when, what's his name? Runner up.
Nick. Yes.
Nick. Did you hear when he said about,
if you loved me, if you didn't love me, why did you make love to me?
Yes.
We all screamed.
I stopped it and I thought, watching did a horror he really show. Just say this?
Yes. We did this. And you know what? That explains why, I mean, if we ever need to show people how powerful sex with someone is, it is that this kid could not get over her.
Yeah.
And it is. And in the end, he said it. It's because they slept together.
Yes.
And we just go, and teenagers think it doesn't matter. And college students go, let's sleep around and the hookup culture and blah, blah, blah. And we can see on television that this kid, he loved her and he slept with her and he couldn't get over her.
Whenever I talk to girls and they have broken up with a boyfriend and they literally can't eat, can't sleep, losing weight, stressed out, my first question is always, did you sleep with him? And the answer is always yes.
Yeah.
If they're struggling that much. Because you're right. It is different. It is something. That's why God made it for marriage. And
you know, there's an author named Donna Freitas.
Okay.
Freitas. And she has a book about the hookup culture, about what's going on in college campuses right now. That is for anyone who cares about this subject. It is her 2 books are absolutely incredible and will teach and Because even, I mean, I'm 34 and it was not that long ago I was in college, right? 10 years ish, 15 years. And so I guess that is a while ago, but, but things are very different now. And even some of my students I do ministry with do not connect their spiritual life with their sexual life. And that's concerning because they're very connected.
Well, I think it's concerning too. And I think the church should speak more up about it. And so I love hearing
that. Donna Freitas is doing it. You should. I heard her at Q, Q in Nashville, and I like stalked her to be like, and that night, Jamie, I had dinner with two of my Vanderbilt boys, both believers, both not sleeping with their girlfriends, both making good life choices, et cetera. And I said, I want to tell you what she says it's like in a hookup culture. And I want you to tell me if she's right. Everything I said, they were like, yeah, that's how the guys talk. Yeah, that's what's going on campus. And it's so different because there's hookup culture and then there's purity culture, right? Like the Christian schools that say, if you get still, there are Christian schools, colleges that if a girl gets pregnant, she has to leave the school. Right. And in Nashville, it's interesting because we have Belmont and Lipscomb.
Yes.
That are very purity culture that it is very shaming and secretive if you sleep around. And then we have Vanderbilt half a mile down the road that is the hookup culture where people sleep around all the time. And they don't interact at all. It's bizarre.
The colleges don't?
No. And so, which has been very interesting because my small group is Belmont and my baseball team is Vanderbilt. And so I deal with hookup culture and purity culture every day with students. So, so anyway, Donna Freitas is leading the way.
Does she talk about purity culture?
Yes.
Okay.
So what she did, she's actually like a sociologist who's also a believer, but what she did is go around to all these different schools and interview students about, I mean, she got like nitty gritty asking them questions. And so her book goes like, here's what purity culture says. Here is what hookup culture says. Here's what you think they say. Here's what they actually say. You know,
I got to get that. That sounds so good.
Yeah, there's two of them.
Okay, I'm gonna get on that. I feel completely removed from college culture, but I deal with women all the time.
Yes, and they and the ones you're dealing with that are 25 were just in that culture.
Yeah,
yeah.
So good. Yeah. So good.
And women, you know, I see it. And the interesting thing is when you get to be in your mid 30s and you're still single, there is this like, do I really keep waiting? Or do I
really,
I mean, do I really need to like, what if I'm never going to get married?
Right.
And what if I decided to just sleep around a little bit and the Lord would maybe the Lord would forgive me.
I
won't get pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, and there's just this, the enemy loves to whisper like, take second best you'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, it is like what you just said. We're separating our sexuality from our spiritualness and from our relationship with God.
Right.
Older you get, I would see how it'd be easier to just make that a wider and wider gap of like, for the love, I'm not 18.
Right. You know? Not dumb.
Right. I'm going to be smart.
It's a very interesting, it's a super interesting conversation to have. And it's not just, if you're married, have sex. If you're not married, don't.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, right? But the conversation can't be that.
No.
21-year-old dudes do not hear me when I say, just don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the boys that is not a believer said to me, Annie, how come every time I have sex with a girl, she wants to like hang out? And so I have to have these conversations without saying, because God.
Right.
Because God made her that way. I just go, well, I usually do say because God made her that way. Yeah. But, you know, it has to be a conversation of like, you're made differently than a female is made. Uh-huh. And you weren't made for this either.
Yeah.
You know, like her response, your response is different, but you're having a response too.
Yeah.
And
so good.
Anyway, it's a different world out there that we have the privilege of mentoring the students through. It is not our curse as the generation older than them. It's our privilege, I think.
So good. So good. Okay. You're in Nashville.
Yep.
I just saw yesterday the Civil Wars are done.
Oh man. Isn't it so sad? I mean, how about a name that was a premonition about what was going to happen?
Thank you.
I mean,
done.
It's so sad. Joy is doing beautiful stuff and some of her new stuff is just going to be incredible.
Is she doing mainstream or is she back with like Christian music?
I don't know.
Okay.
I would bet she stays in the vein of Civil Wars
genre. Okay.
But I don't know. Okay. But it is so sad. It's so sad because what they did together was so lovely and so impactful.
I saw them when they were here at ACL.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those, I saw them play a couple of times in Nashville when they were still trying out the stuff. And then I saw them, a friend of mine was their tour manager. And when I lived in Edinburgh, Scotland, they came over and played in Edinburgh.
Oh.
And so I emailed him and I said, oh my gosh, can I come and say hi to you guys and come to the show? And he goes, well, they're just opening, but if you want to come, of course you can come. And so, and I didn't even ask who they were opening for, right? So I get to Queen's Hall and they're opening for Adele.
Oh gosh.
So I'm in Edinburgh, Scotland, seeing the Civil War's Amos Lee and Adele. It was the most incredible. And there was only probably 150 people of the 1,000 that showed up for Adele because nobody knew who the Civil Wars were in 2000, especially in the UK. And so I was like, all of Nashville would die to be at this show. I mean, it was great. I'm so glad I saw them live. This is so cheesy. They were so magical live.
They were.
And they were so talented.
I saw them live and I thought they had a really big connection. I had so many people who didn't know them ask me, are they married? And I think that was like one of the things wasn't like difficult for me I'm not trying to say that I knew they weren't. And I was like, no, they're not. Right. And everyone was like, oh, really? So they had such a magical connection that it was beautiful, but sometimes that made me feel uncomfortable.
That's right.
That they weren't married.
That is a very common statement. Yeah. People standing around me at the show in Scotland said things that I won't repeat.
Yeah.
That was a common question they got, and a common whispers among the crowd is, how are they not together?
Right.
How,
yeah.
So,
they make such good music.
Yeah. And they would say, I mean, they used to say in interviews, Joy would say, John Paul is my musical soulmate. And it's just so sad to see it not survive. Yeah. It could have been. They could have been, and they still will be, because their two albums are just insane.
Oh my gosh.
But yes. They could have been something that people remember forever.
It's so true.
For how good they are. Unfortunately, they're going to be remembered forever for how good their music is
and
how sad they're falling apart is.
Yeah.
It makes you be real careful about how you partner with people. And there's a lot to be learned as believers in creative fields from watching Civil War.
Oh, that's crazy. Joy is sweet. I met her. I mean, we don't know each other, but I mean, I had dinner at her house once years ago her husband worked in A&R at some record company, and we lived in Nashville, and they were talking to Aaron, and she was just, I just remember her being so nice and so welcoming.
Yeah, they're super lovely. Nate's really funny. And they're just they're great people. They live down the street. I mean, I'm not good friends either, but we wave when we walk by each other. I mean, she's just
I can't wait for her new stuff because she is amazing.
Man, and I write about it in Let's All Be Brave, but she has an older song called Golden Thread that is still probably my favorite song. I mean, it's just some of her independent stuff between CCM and Civil Wars is just some really beautiful work. She's phenomenally talented.
Yeah.
She's amazing.
So fun. Okay. I always finish with my guests with what you're reading and what you're watching.
Okay. What I am watching. I'll start with what I'm reading. I am reading Beautiful Ruins.
Okay.
It's our book club book. I just read Where'd You Go, Bernadette. Have you read that?
No, but someone has mentioned that to me before.
It's great. You should read it. It's one of those that you stop about 10 pages out because you don't want it to be over. So I love that. I just watched Orphan Black is what I just finished.
Orphan Black.
Yeah. So there's probably two racy scenes that I wouldn't suggest, and they say the F word. So that's your warning. I didn't know that going into it. It's BBC America. It's not even HBO. It's BBC America.
Okay.
But it's kind of like, it is kind of like Alias. Do you remember Alias?
Do I remember Alias?
Okay.
Yeah.
It's the best. So it's got the feel of Alias, but the main character, and you learn this in the first 3 minutes, so I'm not ruining anything.
Okay.
The main character is a clone, and the clones start meeting each other.
Okay.
And so it has an Alias feel of they're trying to solve all this stuff.
Uh-huh.
But there's some bloody stuff. And I mean, it's BBC. BBC handles
things differently.
Violence very differently than we do.
Yeah.
But it is interesting. It is very interesting. That's what I'm watching. I also love to watch Deadliest Catch.
Really?
Yeah, I loved it. And I love Real Housewives. Oh, and Don't Be Tardy is back, which is my favorite.
I don't know this. Don't Be Tardy?
It's on Bravo. It's Kim Zolciak and her Atlanta Falcon husband.
Oh, okay. That's how you love it.
Oh, my gosh. You're going to love this, Jamie. So I write about in Let's All Be Brave, there's a part where I talk about waiting on the phone for the cable guy. And I say the reason I wanted to upgrade my cable is because I don't want to miss Kim Zolciak on Real Housewives of Atlanta because she's married to an Atlanta Falcon and that's been my dream for always.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago, I get an email from a girl.
This can be happening.
I get an email from a girl and it says Kim Zolciak is the title. And she opens it and I open it and she goes, I have to tell you, I'm reading your book at Starbucks and I am Kim Zolciak's barista. Her assistant comes in every day and gets drinks for everyone. And I can tell you, you know, I can tell you how nice her assistant is or whatever. And so I write her back and I go, give her your copy of the book and I will mail you
another one,
a new copy. She writes me back and says, I will happily give her a copy of the book, but mine's on my Kindle. So I mailed her another copy.
Sure.
So I was like, I mailed one for Kim because I'm like, why not? You never know where that stuff's going to go. She may need to read about being brave because she's a mama of six. So, but anyway, so that's my other favorite shows. I love Don't Be Tardy. I think reality shows like that. I think The Real Housewives are interesting.
You like
I think
reality TV?
I do some. I mean, I don't want to watch like Big Brother, and I don't like reality competitions per se. But yeah, I mean, for our generation, it all started with Nick and Jessica on MTV.
Hello, the best.
I mean, you just watched their lives, and you felt like they were friends, and
yeah,
so. That's kind of how you and I live too. I'm never going to be an actress in LA being someone else.
Right.
You know, what I love is seeing people be themselves.
Their lives. Yeah.
Yeah. And I really, and that's my strength is in my writing. I won't write fiction because people don't want to hear me tell stories that aren't real. They want to hear me tell my stories.
Right.
And so anyway, what are you watching?
I'm watching basically nothing right now in the summer. We are waiting for Homeland to come back on.
Oh,
we're
sure.
Homeland fans.
Do y'all watch Suits? Suits is my other jam.
No, I've never seen that, but I've heard of
it. It's great. Yeah. Well, there's a married couple in Nashville, Amber and Matt, and we watch Parenthood together during the school year and Suits together in the summer.
Oh, so fun. Yeah. I watched Parenthood forever. I got behind this last spring, so I don't even know what happened.
Yeah, and when you get behind on one of those shows, it's just hard because you're like, I don't have 9 hours.
Can you tell me what happened with the marriage?
I don't remember.
Okay.
It's been a while since I watched. I think you mean Joel and...
What's her name? Yeah.
Julia?
Yeah.
I think they're trying to be okay. I think that's the truth. I don't remember though. Someone's going to email in and be like, you idiots.
Yeah, but I was stressed about that. I was just like stressed for them. And that's not when I stopped watching. Not on purpose. It just kind of life happened.
Yeah. Yeah. So are you reading anything interesting?
I'm reading right now Kelly Minter's new book.
Yeah.
Wherever the River Runs. So I'm reading that.
It's beautiful. I've read part of it. I haven't read it all.
Yeah.
The next one I'm picking up that's nonfiction is Jen Hatmaker's The Life Interrupted.
Interrupted?
Yeah. I'm going to read that one next.
That was my first Hatmaker book that I read. And I tell Jen all the time, this is my favorite book she's ever written. I mean, it's whenever people ask, should I read a book from Jen Hatmaker? Mom was like, Interrupted. It's
okay.
And that's, so when she told me they were re-releasing it,
yeah,
I was like, this is the best plan. It's such a good book.
You know what else I'm reading Tim Keller's The Meaning of Marriage.
Oh, have you read that? I read pieces of it.
Yeah.
But I never read the whole thing.
There's like four young women in my life that are finishing college that are engaged or about to get engaged. And people kept saying, that's the book we should read together. Cause I'm like, I mean, we could sit down and talk. My knowledge of firsthand knowledge of how to be engaged or married is super limited. So I'm like, let's read a book together and talk about it.
That's great. I've heard great things about that book.
I think that's such a big, I think it's important for us to go even in mentoring. Cause I love mentoring. I'm like, even if you don't know the path that someone's on, you can still mentor them.
Yeah.
You don't have to walk it first. You can still mentor them in some capacity, right?
Jesus, I mean, they're the same.
Right. And so I'm like, we are going to read through this book. And if there are questions I don't know how to answer, I have a lot of people we can call.
There you go.
So
you should write a book on mentoring.
Oh, maybe I will. We have a couple of ideas in the hopper. That's an interesting one. I do love doing it.
I hear that in your, like, your soul and your voice.
I think it's fun. Yeah. I think it's such a privilege that we get, and y'all do it when parenting all the time. And that's what parenting is day, 24 hour a day mentoring.
Right.
And feeding.
Yeah.
Keeping alive, mentoring, keep alive. Yeah. I just have to mentor.
Andy, that's right. It's been so fun.
Oh, I think you're the best. Thank you so much, Jamie.
So fun. Okay. Go do your work today.
I will. We're going to get some work done.
Awesome. Well, I didn't ask you this. I always ask my authors this. Do you have another book in the works?
No, no's the best answer. We will. I mean, I want to keep writing.
Okay. Have you fulfilled all your contract stuff?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're in new contract talks.
Cool.
So yeah, exciting. It's fun. Yeah. I'm like, let's just settle this down so we can start writing books.
I love it. Exciting. And if you're listening, another thing about Bookbrite is you really took a lot of steps to be a writer. And mm-hmm. anyone that's listening, I have people all the time ask me like, hey, I think I want to do this or I think I want to do that. And you really give a lot of words to that and a lot of voice into how hard it was. But then how much work you had to do and how God was in it. And so congrats on all you've got going on.
So when I start getting those emails, I can just go, hey, just buy my book and read it.
There you go. This is easy.
This is simple. It'll just be the next 10 years of your life before a book comes out. Don't worry about it.
I love it. Okay, Annie, thanks for joining me on the happy hour.
Thanks, friend. I loved it.
The Happy Hour is produced and hosted by myself, Jamie Ivey, with assistance from Nikki Ogden and Ashley Caldwell. And the show is edited by Jason Talley.